Well, here we are, a little bit late today. This is Thursday evening as opposed to being sometime Thursday around noon. Apologize to the regular listeners of this particular reading. We got a little bit tied up earlier this week. Took ourselves a small vacation, actually overnight, to Tyler State Park in Texas. I got back on track this week too with some of the chapters on the book. I'm up to about chapter 21, 22. I've been sketching up. Sketching out a few things coming up later on. We've got a few little things going on here and there. This week we have chapter 13. As you remember, last week we were back in Magnolia listening to or watching as Emily was having herself a hectic day, a hectic Tuesday, trying to figure out exactly what was going on with her husband over in West Virginia. He, in the meantime, as we last left them, they were in search of somebody that Dan, well, they thought it was a suspect in the arson, the arson in West Virginia. Don't really have any tie-in yet for anything in the Ohio or over in Ohio, except for Dan himself. Dan and Beasley are driving on their way from the restaurant over to the cabin, and that's where we start on chapter 13. Chapter 13. A sheriff's cruiser prevented Beasley from going up the driveway leading to the cabin where Dan was staying. She pulled right up to the deputy. "What's going on here, Rusty?" she asked. "Sorry, Beasley," the deputy apologized, "but I have strict orders to be on the lookout for Dan Stevens. I'm to detain the prisoner and take him back to the sheriff's office." "This is Mr. Stevens, and Mr. Stevens will stay with me," Beasley told the deputy. "That is, unless you can produce a proper warrant." "Well, he has a warrant waiting in Parsons." "That's not good enough, Rusty," she interrupted. "Unless you have a warrant in your hand, you may not have Mr. Stevens." The deputy stood, dumbfounded. "Now move the car and let us through. Our pizza's getting cold," Beasley demanded. Rusty shook his head and moved his cruiser. Beasley continued up the driveway. "You know him, I take it," Dan remarked. "Rusty Collier and I go way back," she told him. "We'd arm wrestle back in grade school. I always bested him, too." "And he ended up here? How ironic." "Rusty didn't as much end up here as he ended up staying here. We've known each other for most of our lives," Beasley told Dan. "I thought you might be on a first-name basis." "Nobody uses my first name. Everyone knows me as Beasley." She parked her car next to his, continuing to talk while they got out of the car. "Even my daddy calls me Beasley. Everybody but my mother calls me Beasley. She was the only one who called me by my first name." "Oh, what is your first name, that is? What is it?" "You'll have to ask my mother," she told him while they entered the cabin, "but I don't think that you'll get her to talk with you. She's buried outside of Parsons." "Sorry to hear that," Dan told her. "It's all right," Beasley sighed. "That was years ago. Let's eat." Beasley took the pizza boxes from Dan, set them on the table, opened them, and started to dig in. Dan offered a short prayer, which she pointedly ignored, walking over to the refrigerator to look for something to drink while holding a piece of pizza. "Beer?" she said, looking puzzled. "I was led to understand that you were a minister." "I am," he told her, "but that doesn't keep me from an occasional beer." "But you're supposed to preach against it, aren't you? I mean, the evils of John Barleycorn and the temptations of evil." "I preach against the overconsumption of alcohol, not total abstinence. A little now and then can actually be beneficial," Dan pointed out. "Too much of anything can be harmful, even water." "So you don't mind if I steal one of your beers?" she said. "Not at all. Grab me a pop while you're in there, would you?" Beasley brought a can of cola and a can of beer to the table and sat down. "I take it you don't care for men of the cloth," Dan said. "I've seen enough snake handlers and holy rollers in my lifetime to think that there is something fundamentally wrong with Christianity." Same here, he agreed. Are you a preacher or are you not a preacher, she asked. Part of the reason I'm out here is to sort that out. You do believe in something, don't you? Like a road to salvation through your personal belief or something? The question of salvation is moot, he replied. It's something in the future. It's based on whether or not there really is an afterlife. Is there? Beasley asked. It depends on your belief system. There are plenty of different beliefs out there. Every one of them is valid to the people who believe in them. Beasley broke into a broad smile. Even Wicca? She asked. Even Wicca, Dan confirmed. It fills a human need to belong or believe in something larger than oneself. I'm a Wiccan, Beasley confessed. Does that challenge your beliefs as a Christian minister? At one time it did, now I'm not so sure. I've seen a lot of personal energy from people who identify themselves as Wiccan. Aren't you afraid that I'll go to hell? Dan smiled. What happens at the end of your life is your business. You have a belief system which works for you, and that's all that's important now, isn't it? Never thought I'd hear that from a fundy, she admitted. Almost makes me want to go to church. Well, if you're ever in Magnolia, you're welcome to attend. Would you mind shifting gears here for a few minutes, he continued. I'd like to know whether or not I need to get ready to go to jail. Will we be able to finish our lunch? More than likely, Beasley assured him. She paused to chew a mouthful of pizza she'd just taken. Depends. Takes a better part of an hour to get to the county seat and another hour just to get back. Then there's the judge. He'll need to issue an order. If he's predisposed, it'll still take him an hour to get the paperwork together. I really don't see him or a deputy back here, say, before five or so. And so I could probably get in a nap, Dan stated. You go right ahead, Beasley assured him. I'll be close in in case something happens. They finished their meal and cleaned up what little needed to be cleaned up. Dan went into the cabin's small bedroom while Beasley went out onto the front porch. Because of the busy morning, Dan fell asleep easily. We need to get up. Sheriff's on his way. Beasley's voice cut through a hazy dream Dan had about having to write a sermon on some subject he knew nothing about. He opened his eyes to see Beasley drying herself. She had obviously been taking advantage of the hot tub on the back porch. Rusty just gave me a heads up. Sheriff has a warrant to arrest you and search your car, she explained. We have 3 minutes before he gets here, if we're lucky. And if we're not, Dan was coming out of the haze after his lunch nap. Less than a minute. She dropped her towel and marched out of the bedroom onto the back porch where she got dressed. Beasley didn't seem the least bit concerned about exposing herself. Dan felt a little bit guilty, though, for invading her personal space. He got up and headed to the front of the cabin just in time to see a parade of three sheriff's patrol cars, lights flashing, making their way up the driveway. Beasley came up behind him, using his shoulder as a brace while she put on one of her shoes. Well, at least we had a minute and a half, she sighed. The cars stopped in unison. The sheriff and five of his deputies got out of their cars. Two of the deputies stood next to Dan's car while the sheriff and three other deputies marched right up to the cabin door. Beasley opened the door before the sheriff could knock on it. Stand aside, ma'am, the sheriff told Beasley. I have business with Mr. Stevens. He pushed her aside before she could object. Mr. Daniel Lee Stevens, the sheriff glared. Please hand over your car keys. The keys are in it. It's unlocked. One of the deputies called out the same fact at almost the same time. Been expecting us? The sheriff asked. Dan shrugged his shoulders. Let me cut to the chase, son. The sheriff was through being polite. You're the primary suspect in the arson of the First Baptist Church in Davis. You are under arrest. Dan stood in shock, unable to move while his Miranda rights were being read. The world seemed to slow down. He looked over at Beasley, hoping that she would say something which would make the sheriff go away so he could finish his nap, have dinner, and wait for the next morning when everything would return to normal. He was led outside, told to put his hands on one of the patrol cars and spread his legs so that he could be frisked. To keep his mind off the fact that he was being violated, he looked over to his car. His wife's car, actually, as deputies opened every door. Just as he was told to get up and led to the back seat of a patrol car, the deputy searching the trunk summoned the sheriff over to see something. They spoke in hushed tones. Sheriff just nodded his head and barked some orders. Rusty and another deputy got in the front seat of the patrol car, backed it up, turned it around, and headed back down the driveway. "Judge ain't going to be too happy with you when the sheriff comes back with the evidence," Rusty commented when they turned onto the main road. "Way it looks, you better have a damn good lawyer, preacher. A damn good lawyer." Next week we're going to be on chapter 14. Yeah, with 14 we're going to be back to Magnolia and with Emily. And in the meantime, I'm going to keep writing. I hope you've enjoyed today's presentation, and we hope to see you here next week. In the meantime, be seeing you.